In this section, we shall look at the relief an individual receives when he makes a capital gain on the sale of his only or main residence. This relief is known as principal private residence relief, shortened to PPR relief. PPR relief exempts all or part of a gain which arises on a property which an individual has used as his home. We start by calculating the capital gain on the sale of the property in the normal way. From this, we will deduct principal private residence relief to arrive at the chargeable gain. PPR relief is an exemption relief and reduces the capital gain rather than deferring it to a later period in time. To calculate the amount of the gain which is exempt, we multiply the gain by the fraction you see on your screen. Here we take the period during which the taxpayer has occupied his property and divide by the total period of ownership. As you will see, if the taxpayer has lived in the property as his home throughout the whole period of ownership, 100% of the gain is exempt and no gain is chargeable. For most taxpayers, therefore, a capital gain made on the sale of their home will be completely exempt, as it will be wholly covered by PPR relief. A gain will only arise if the taxpayer has been absent from the property at some point during his period of ownership. We will look at how we calculate capital gains in this instance later in the session. Before we look at the detailed computation, let us spend a few moments discussing what the revenue mean by the term principal private residence. Gains on the disposal of a dwelling house will qualify for PPR relief. A dwelling house means not only the main building, but includes any relevant buildings adjoining it. Relevant buildings here would include garages, outhouses, and separate buildings occupied either by members of the family or by staff or employees. A taxpayer's principal private residence also includes gardens and grounds, provided the entire area, house, gardens and grounds, does not exceed half a hectare. The revenue will permit a larger area of gardens to qualify for PPR relief if they are satisfied that the whole area of land is required for the reasonable enjoyment of the property. Over the years, there has been a large volume of case law in which the courts have been asked to decide whether certain buildings and areas of land are within the meaning of the taxpayer's principal private residence, or whether they are separate assets for CDT purposes. In the case of Beatty versus Wakefield from 1981, staff quarters consisting of a bungalow in which the housekeeper and gardener lived were held to be part of the dwelling house. As such, the gain made by Mr. Wakefield on the sale of both the main house and the staff quarters qualified for full principal private residence relief. The court agreed with the taxpayer that the adjoining house was within the curtilage of the main dwelling house and was not, as the revenue contended, a separate and distinct residence. However, in the similar case of Lewis versus Lady Rook from 1992, a gardener's cottage was held to be a separate residence and not part of Lady Rook's dwelling house, largely due to the long distance between the two properties. As a result, when Lady Rook sold the gardener's cottage and made a capital gain, no PPR relief was available. For the rest of this session, we shall concentrate on how we calculate principal private residence relief. As we mentioned earlier, the PPR relief is the gain multiplied by periods of occupation divided by the total period of ownership. In this context, occupation means both actual occupation and deemed occupation. By deemed occupation, we mean periods during which the taxpayer is physically absent from the property, but for PPR purposes, he is treated as living there. We shall look at the various periods of deemed occupation on the next page. Finally here, when calculating PPR relief, we only consider periods of ownership and occupation since the 1st of April 1982. This fits with general rebasing principles, where pre-1982 assets are treated as having been bought on the 31st of March 1982. Let us now consider the various periods of deemed occupation. Certain periods of absence can be treated as occupation, and these periods are listed at section 223 of TCGA 1992. Before looking at periods of deemed occupation, it is very important to note that a period of absence can only be treated as a period of deemed occupation if it was both preceded and followed by a period of actual physical occupation. In essence, the taxpayer must create a sandwich. If a gap period is to qualify for PPR relief, it must be both preceded and followed by actual occupation. Therefore, if a taxpayer purchases a property, lives in it for a while, then moves out, we can only count the period of absence as a period of occupation if the taxpayer returns to the property and lives in the house before he sells it. The Revenue have not given any guidance about how long a taxpayer must live in a property for that to constitute actual occupation. Instead, they will look at the individual facts and circumstances of each case. It may be possible for a taxpayer to return to his house for just a few weeks in order to create this sandwich, but the important thing is that the taxpayer must satisfy the Revenue that for that short period the property was his home. As far as the Revenue are concerned, they will look at the quality of the occupation rather than the physical time period. In any event, the last 36 months of ownership are always treated as a period of deemed occupation, regardless of whether the taxpayer is living there or not. The only condition here is that the taxpayer must have occupied the property as his home at some stage, even if that was before April 1982. The legislation is very specific as to which periods of absence can count as deemed occupation. Here there are three periods of absence that will qualify. Where the owner is abroad by reason of his employment, that period of absence can be treated as a period of deemed occupation. This period is unlimited. Where the owner was absent from the property due to working elsewhere, either as an employee or as a self-employed trader, that period of absence will also qualify as deemed occupation. Here the period of deemed occupation is limited to a maximum of 4 years. Finally, any period of absence up to a maximum of 3 years will qualify as a period of deemed occupation. These three periods of deemed occupation can apply cumulatively. This means that a longer period of absence may all qualify as deemed occupation, as certain periods can be added together. Period of absence is treated as a period of occupation if the individual is living with a spouse or civil partner who meets one of the conditions relating to work or employment. Finally here, it is extremely important to remember that a period of absence will only qualify as deemed occupation if it was both preceded and followed by actual occupation. This means that the taxpayer must return to the property and live in the house as his home in order for the intervening periods to qualify. Let us illustrate this by way of an example. A taxpayer bought a house in July 1988 and sold it 22 years later in July 2010. From July 1988 to July 1989, the taxpayer occupied the property as his main residence. In July 1989, the taxpayer was relocated by his employer to work in Leeds, and his secondment finished in July 1994. At that point, he returned to the property and lived there until July 1997. In July 1997, the taxpayer was sent by his employer to work in Paris. He returned from Paris in July 2008 and resumed occupation of the property until the date of sale. Whilst on secondment, he lived in employer-provided accommodation. On the sale of the property in July 2010, the taxpayer made a gain of £600,000. Our requirement is to calculate the amount of the principal private residence relief which we will deduct from this gain to give us the chargeable gain. To calculate the PPR relief, we must identify the taxpayer's periods of occupation and periods of absence. From July 1988 until July 1989, the taxpayer lived in the property. So this is 1 year of actual occupation. Between July 1989 and July 1994, the taxpayer was working elsewhere in the UK. In order to determine whether this qualifies as a period of deemed occupation, we must look forward and find out if the taxpayer resumes occupation of the property at some point after July 1994. We know that between July 1994 and July 1997, the taxpayer lived in the property as his main residence. We therefore have a sandwich, so we can consider the deemed occupation rules. Periods of absence whilst the taxpayer is working elsewhere in the UK qualify as deemed occupation up to the maximum of 4 years. In addition, any period of absence up to 3 years will also qualify as deemed occupation. Because these periods can apply cumulatively, we can add them together. This means that the whole of the 5 year period between July 1989 and July 1994 will qualify as a period of deemed occupation. Between July 1997 and July 2008, the taxpayer was in Paris by reason of his employment. Again, in order to find out whether this period qualifies, we must look forward and see if the taxpayer comes back
and reoccupies the property. The taxpayer returned to the property and lived there between July 2008 and July 2010.
He therefore has 2 years of actual occupation. Once again, we have created a sandwich, so we can consider the deemed occupation rules.
Any period of absence during which the owner was abroad by reason of his employment will qualify as deemed occupation. Here, therefore, the whole 11-year period will be treated as a period of occupation. The whole period of ownership, i.e. 22 years, is therefore treated as occupation, and the taxpayer has no periods of absence. This is despite the fact that out of the 22 years of ownership, he has only physically lived in the property for 6 years. The gain of £600,000 will therefore qualify for £600,000 worth of PPR relief.
This reduces the gain to zero, effectively making the gain completely exempt.